This is John chapter 9. I don't have to tell you the verses because it's the whole chapter. As Jesus walked along, he saw a blind man from birth. His disciples asked him, "Rabbi, who sinned, this man or his parents, that he was born blind?" Jesus answered, "Neither this man nor his parents sinned. He was born blind so that God's work might be revealed in him. We must work the works of him who sent me while it is day. Night is coming when no one can work. As long as I am in the world, I am the light of the world." When he had said this, he spat on the ground and made mud with the saliva and spread the mud on the man's eyes, saying to him, "Go, wash in the pool of Siloam," which means sent. Then he went and washed and came back able to see. The neighbors who had seen him before as a beggar began to ask, "Is this not the man who used to sit and beg?" Some were saying, "It is he." Others were saying, "No, but it's someone like him." He kept saying, "I'm the man." But they kept asking him, "How were your eyes opened?" Well, he answered, "The man called Jesus made mud, spread it on my eyes, and said, 'Go wash in Siloam.' I went, I washed, and I received my sight." They said to him, "Where is this guy?" And he said, "I don't know." They brought him to the Pharisees, the man who had formerly been blind. Now it was a Sabbath day when Jesus made the mud and opened his eyes. When the Pharisees also began to ask him how he had received his sight, he said to them, "Well, he put mud on my eyes, I washed, and now I see." Some of the Pharisees said, "This man's not from God, for he does not observe the Sabbath." But others said, "How can a man who is a sinner perform such signs?" And they were divided. So they said again to the blind man, "What do you say about this Jesus? It was your eyes he opened." And the man replied, "He is a prophet." The Judeans did not believe that he had been blind and received his sight until they called the parents of the man who had received the sight and asked them, "Is this your son, who you say was born blind? How then does he now see?" His parents said this, "We know that this is our son and that he was born blind, but we do not know how it was or it is that he now sees, nor do we know who opened his eyes." I think they got a little snarky here. "Ask him. He's of age. He will speak for himself." Snark happens in all generations. His parents said this because they were afraid of the Judeans, for the Judeans had already agreed that anyone who confessed Jesus to be the Messiah would be put out of the synagogue. Therefore, his parents said, "Well, he is of age. Ask him." So for a second time, they called the man who had been blind, and they said to him, "Give glory to God. We know that this man Jesus is a sinner." Well, the man answered, "I don't know whether he is a sinner. One thing I do know, that though I was blind, now I see." Well, they said to him, "Well, what did he do to you? How did he open your eyes?" And he answered them, "I told you already, and you would not listen. Why do you want to hear it again? Do you want to become his disciples?" Then they reviled him, saying, "You are his disciple. We are disciples of Moses. And we know that God has spoken to Moses, but as for this man, we do not know where he comes from." Well, the man answered, "Well, here's an astonishing thing. You do not know where he comes from, and yet he opened my eyes. We know that God does not listen to sinners, but he does listen to one who worships him and obeys his will. Never since the world began has it been heard that anyone opened the eyes of a person born blind. If this man were not from God, he could do nothing." They answered him, "You were born entirely in sins, and you're trying to teach us?" And they drove him out. Jesus heard that they had driven him out, and when he found the man, he said, "Do you believe in the Son of Man?" The man answered, "Who is this? Who is he? Sir, tell me, that I may believe in him." And Jesus said to him, "You have seen him, and the one who is speaking to you is he." And the man replied, "Lord, I believe." And he worshiped him. And Jesus said, I came into this world for judgment, so that those who do not see may see, and those who do see may become blind." Now some of the Pharisees near him heard this and said to him, "Surely we are not blind, are we?" Jesus said to them, "If you were blind, you would not have sin. But now you say, 'We see,' and your sin remains."
I can't resist. Amazing grace. Once was blind, now I see. So I'd like to play it. John Newton was a merchant, a sailor, a sea captain in the slave trades, sailing ships filled with slaves to be sold. He himself, at one point in his life, was captured by the British Navy and became a slave, forced to serve as a sailor on the British warships. His father sent a man to rescue him, and he went back to be a sea captain in the slave trade. There was a terrible storm that threatened to capsize his boat, but they made it safely to shore to Donegal in Ireland. And that began to change his life. He became an Anglican priest. He became very active in the abolitionist movement in England. He wrote hymns to express his faith, over 300. One of them was called, I have to find it here, Promoting Belief, The title of this hymn was called Faith and Expectations. Faith and Expectations. About 50 years later, a man set the tune, or set those words to a different tune, which was basically New Britain, the tune we know. And it became very popular. Amazing grace, I once was blind, but now I see. In this gospel, John relates signs of Jesus to promote belief in him as seeing that he indeed is the Son of God. And here we have his fifth sign that Bruce read, giving sight to the man born blind. I hope you heard that scripture as a drama. It almost could be a play, and to watch this unfold. I wondered for a while about that clay. Why did Jesus spit on the ground and put clay on his face? Amy Jill Levine said, well, there was a belief that saliva had healing medicinal properties. Well, maybe. But I don't really think that's what it was about. I think it was a test. I think it was a test to see what this man would do. If he would trust, then indeed a miracle could happen to him. And so Jesus said, I will put this mud on your eyes. And then you go to the the pool of Siloam and wash. Many would say, you gotta be kidding. Whoever heard of a person born blind receiving their sight? I'm not gonna do that. I'll look like a fool. But he did. He had what we might call faith, that something good could come of this. Something caused him to believe and take that first step. I was reading a book recently by Richard Rohr, and he talked about a kind of a different way of seeing faith, not as a belief in whatever, but as an ability to take that first step to open the door to something new, to something that maybe could happen. That faith is that sort of urge or the power to say, yes, I'll try it. How many times have we said no and turned away and not taken that first step out of fear or doubt or disbelief that nothing would happen? But the man did. He got up, somehow being blind, found the pool, washed himself, and miracle of miracles, the scales fell from his eyes and he could see. And then he returned. And of course, then the drama continues. And the Jews said, isn't that the man who was blind? What? Yeah, it looks like him. Yeah, sure. Then the Pharisees, when did he do this? It was on the Sabbath. This man is no good. He is a sinner. He healed on the Sabbath. Get caught up in those rules. And you can't see what has actually happened. Blinded by tradition, by firm rules, cut off from seeing the miracle in front of their face. We are disciples of Moses. Was that the last person through whom God spoke with authority and love? No. Jesus came, but as it said in the prologue, many, many could not see him, did not recognize him. But for those who did, he gave them power to become children of God. He shared his light. So I think the question which really is posed, are we the ones who are blind, or are we the ones that can see? We met in Bible study on Thursday, as we talked about this for a little over an hour or so, and we kind of got to the place where we were talking about times in our lives where we came to seeing something in a totally new way that we had not seen before, something that had been hidden from us. And so I thought about times in my own life where maybe that happened. I remember the first time I read Bury My Heart at Wounded Knee. Have you read that book? They didn't teach it in school. I was an adult when I stumbled onto it, and it brought me to tears what white people did to the Indians. And so hearing that story enabled me to see something to which I've been blind. It just hadn't occurred to me. You know, Lone Ranger and Tonto, that's the way I grew up. A year or 2 years ago here in our church, we talked about white privilege, the knapsack we carry, unloading that. That was new for me, and it surprised me. I have to say, with all honesty, you know, I kind of didn't really think deeply about it. But I realized that, yeah, I am a white, I am a male, and I'm privileged. How do I respond to that? What is my responsibility once I realize that truth and the harm that has been forced on so many people? I've come to feel terrible about the suffering, the pain, the abuse that males have fostered on females, the trauma that so women carry because of abuse by men. It took me a while to see that. What do I do with it? So these kinds of things happen to us if we're open and we encounter something, and if we allow ourselves to begin to see and to hear and to feel, and then we're changed. We can't undo that seeing, and we have to respond. And then there's a different kind of seeing, and that, I guess, is what I really want to focus on this morning, and that's our spiritual blindness. How we've missed seeing deeply the mystery of God, of Jesus, His power, His love. What things have kept us from digging deeply into that kind of spiritual truth? Or do we settle for a more secular kind of life where we can control, or hope to try to control, what happens to us and what we achieve and how life unfolds, and kind of dismiss the spiritual truth of living, serving, being part of the miracle of God and His love? I realized at some point in my own life that something was missing spiritually. And I wondered, what could I do? And I looked for something that could give me a practice, a path, something to deepen. I knew it just wasn't going to happen. Something had to be done. I guess I'd like to kind of outline that as I talk about it. I've been influenced by so many people, but certainly meditation has been a powerful kind of activity. And I'd like to talk about several people. Thomas Merton is the first one that I'd like to talk about. And he was a monk. He meditated every day, 10 years before his death, this happened, and I'm just going to read a little bit. In Louisville, at the corner of 4th and Walnut, so this was a particular place and time, 10 years before he died. In Louisville, at the corner of 4th and Walnut, at the center of the shopping district, I was suddenly overwhelmed with the realization that I loved all these people. I was overwhelmed. I loved all these people. That they were mine and I theirs, that we could not be alien to one another even though we were total strangers. It was like waking from a dream of separateness, of spurious self-isolation in a special world, the world of renunciation and supposed holiness. The sense of liberation from an illusory difference was such a joy and a relief to me that I almost laughed aloud. And I suppose my happiness could have taken the form in the words, thank God that I am like other people. He said men, other people. That revelation, exquisite in its particularity, leads to the conclusion, nearly everyone's favorite Thomas Merton lines. At the center of our being is a point of nothingness, which is untouched by sin and illusion. A point of pure truth, a point or spark which belongs entirely to God. It is like a pure diamond blazing with the invisible light of heaven. It is in everybody. It is in everybody. And if we could see it, we would see these billions of points of light coming together in the face and blaze of a sun that would make all the darkness and cruelty of life vanish completely. I have no program for this seeing, It is only given. But the gate of heaven is everywhere. Thomas Merton. I get an email every day from Richard Rohr. Last week, probably in tying in with this text of the man being born blind, he spent a week focusing on Suzuki Roshi's words, beginner's mind. There's this Catholic monk talking about Suzuki Roshi, famous Buddhist priest, Roshi, talking about the name, beginner's mind. How important it is to drop all of those things we think we know and begin to see life with beginner's eyes. Have we tried that? Or are we like the Pharisees? We know that God spoke to Moses and missed seeing Jesus because they did not have beginner's eyes. And if we're honest, most of the time, neither do we. We are locked into our own opinions, our own held truths, the way of seeing life, and it's hard for something new to break in, even God. Even God. As you know, I've been practicing centering prayer ever since discovered and founded and practiced it, that retreat some of us went to. Centering prayer developed by Father Keating and several other monks. Why did they do that? Well, they were in Spencer, Massachusetts in a monastery, and young adults keep stopping at the monastery asking directions for the Zen Center down the road. And he said, why are you doing that? He said, well, we want to learn how to meditate. We want to grow spiritually. He said, we've been meditating for thousands of years. Why do you need to go down to a Zen Center? He said, well, you have? Well, he began to realize that maybe there was this hunger by Christians looking for something, way to go deeper. And they couldn't find it in their own tradition because they didn't know it existed. Well, Tom, Father Keating challenged several other monks, let's come up with a Christian kind of meditation that might appeal to these young adults seeking spiritual growth. And that was the birth of centering prayer. Their source was the cloud of knowing and 1,500 years of meditation. And of course, Saint Cynthia Bourgeau, in her wisdom schools and all that she is doing, and work in helping people to open and to grow deeply. She quoted from the cloud of unknowing, God may be reached and held close by means of love, but by means of thought, never. God may be reached, this is from the cloud of knowing, God may be reached and held close by means of love, but by means of thought, never. And that was my problem. I was using my head to find God. It ain't gonna work. So these teachers helped me begin to look in a different direction, to look in my heart, to go deeper. I was reading Father Keating, talking about centering prayer. And he said the first and perhaps most important part of beginning centering prayer is to hold your intention to release yourself to receiving the action of God inside, upon you, within you. To hold your intent to open yourself to allowing God to work deeply in your life and in your heart. I hadn't heard it that way before, frankly. I think I was sort of skipping that step. But I think there's something there. Could it be that God is waiting for us to say, yes, come in? Could it be? Could it be that God is waiting for us to say, yes, I'm open to receiving you in my heart, and I will follow what you offer to me? I'll close. It's late. Richard of Chichester said a prayer, which I know you know. O Lord, three things I pray. May I see thee more clearly, love thee more dearly, follow thee more nearly, day by day. May be that our prayer each day. Amen.